counts now. Okay, we're on Nefesh HaChaim. It's our 18th class. And we are in the middle of chapter 15, Perek Tesvav. When we begin, we will start three lines from the top on page Nun Gimel. Those who were not here last week, I feel sorry for you, because we did quite a bit of meat last week, and you may struggle a bit tonight. And then again, unless you got the tapes and you heard it, and caught up, but it's going to be a little rough. Tonight will be definitely the hardest class in the book. But if you don't understand it, you could still come back next week. It's like not a problem. But as much as you get, and that's it. You know, just get these hard weeks, and this is one of them. So last week, we got into the, let's go back 2 weeks, was it? Where we discussed the worlds, mm-hmm. right? And when we're talking about a world, these are a world we define as a comprehensive grouping of a particular plane of existence, and depending on how close it is to the Almighty, higher up or down furthest away. We discussed this. We only discussed really four. That's all Reb Chaim talked about. However, we should know there is one higher than Atzilut. It's called Adam Kadmon, the primary of primaries, where it's even more refined and subtle, that which emanates out from God. Reb Chaim doesn't even deal with it. It's so refined. But just put it down, because obviously you're seeing we're having a list of fives. So we wanted to give you all the fives that are there. What's important to realize is that there are, but there's lots of fives, right? Why is there so many fives over here? Five really is a very important Hebrew number. There's always five levels of anything or anywhere imaginable. Because there's five levels that usually define anything. And these are the categories that you have over here. And the five are all the way on the left, which we'll explain a little bit later when we get to the Sefirot. But there's the idea of the will, the wisdom, the understanding, the doing, and the focal point. Those are categories of any form of existence. No matter what existence it has, you have to have those five categories, all right? And therefore, almost anything in existence has these five categories. Now, a lot of times it'll look like 10. 10 is also a big number in Judaism, but really the 10 is nothing more than five. As, if you recall, in last week's Parsha class, right? Where was the 10 commandments, but two tablets, five and five, and we told you then that you read them across. One goes with six, two with seven, three with eight, four with nine, five with ten. So it's really five ideas, right? Five books of Moses. Okay, lots of fives over here. Five worlds, five levels of soul, five. Really, the Sefirot, the ten Sefirot, are closed up into five faces. All right, so five becomes a very critical number, and that's what we're going to spend a lot of time on today with all these fives, and try to get some general notions of how these systems work. The one main system works through all the different subsystems over here. All right. So 2 weeks ago we talked about the five worlds. Last week, and at the end of the week before, we talked about the three lowest levels of soul, which was starting at the bottom, the nefesh. That is the part of the animated part of the human being that you see, the part that relates most to the body, right? And we said that the symbolic representation, that was the liver, because of the blood that goes through them, you know. And above that is the ruach, a more spiritual level. Above that is neshama. We said nefesh is responsible for action. Ruach is manifest through speech. Neshama is manifest through what you think. And he didn't talk about more, but later on in the book, I don't know if we'll ever get to it, he gets to root of neshama, sharish neshama, and then there's even the root of the root of that, or colloquially known, those two are Chaya and Yechida, of other names. But it really doesn't matter what we call them, because we don't understand what they are anyway. You have that. We talked about that last week, and we used the glass blower's analogy of how, just like the glass blower, when he blows into a tube, so we say we've got the breath of the glass blower before it even emits into the tube, that is like the neshama. It's like the breath, and that breath goes in through the tube, and that forms the ruach, the wind in the tube. And as it goes into the glass, it pushes the glass till the glass finally rests at a stop position, and that's like the idea of the nefesh. That's the nefesh, when things come to rest. And just like that's the analogy, so it is. When God blew life into man, it works in a similar fashion. All right? And we talked about how the nefesh is really intermeshed almost with the body. It's there with every part of the body, behind every part of the body. While the ruach is something that travels through the body, is within the body, and it has a definite connection to the body because it's through the body. However, the neshama, although, if you recall, in the beginning, at the end of chapter 14, he referred to that the place where the neshama resides is in the brain, okay? But as we ended off last week, he started to say, well, really only very few people merited that. First man, Moshe, were so spiritual that godly breath, they were able to contain that godly breath within themselves. No one else has that, so now we talk about these sparks that come sparking off on top of the head of man, as if to say the neshama is external to the human being. Certainly the fourth and fifth level are totally external to the human being. They're so external, the human being can never integrate it into himself. But the third is something that you try to integrate into yourself. And we said that level of soul, neshama, is what gives us the ability to understand the secrets of Torah. And that's about where we ended last week. That's where we ended last week in a nutshell. And we will try to push on. Now let's just read a little bit and then we'll discuss which issues he's trying to explain for us. So, we're on Nun Gemol. We're on the third line. He says, V'ayim ba'etz ha'chaim, look in the work of the Etz ha'chaim, which discusses, Amnam, he says, Lo kol adam zeich lezeh, not every person merits that the person will get this tremendous wisdom to understand all the mysteries of the Torah. Veda, and you should know, ki mi sheyesh biyado koch b'masav, anyone who has strength in his actions, meaning to say a tzaddik who can draw more of his neshama towards him, then az yelo zechira nifla b'tayra. If you can connect more to that third level of soul, you'll have a tremendous capacity to remember Torah. V'yavin kol razei ha-Torah, and you'll understand all the secrets of Torah. V'yizgalo lo razei ha-Torah kitikunim, they will be revealed to him the secrets of the Torah properly. Adkan, that's all he says. V'ayin lahalan, look later on, ha-inyan b'shrasha elyon, as we go into the heavenly roots, v'tavin, you'll understand all this. Okay. V'zeh shamar ha-kasim, this is what Job says. Achein, truly, ruach hi be'enosh, there's a spirit in man. V'nishmas shakai, and the soul of God, tivi name, that gives them understanding. Now notice, the soul is referred to being be'enosh, in the man, the wind, the ruach, the spirit is in the man, but the nishmas shakai, the neshama, the breath of God, doesn't say is in the man, just gives them understanding. Ratzaloimer, meaning to say, Shebechinas haruach, that the level of ruach, humishtal shel, that is what downgrades into umushpa and is dumped into v'nichnas mesoch adam and enters inside the person. Aval neshama, but the soul, that neshama shehi, which is the nishma shakai, is the soul of God, the breath of God. Ratzaloimer, meaning to say, neshimas piv yizbarach, the breath of the mouth, so to speak, of God. Einatz musa mushpa umizgal b'socharam, its essence does not emanate and reveal itself within the man. Why? Kihi meromim tishkon, because it dwells in the higher places. Where? Besoch piv yisparach kivyachol, as it were, in God's mouth. Rakshiana senes lo bina binitzotze oralov. But it does give wisdom and intellect with the sparks of its light that it's on it. Laskilo b'im ke matzpuneh haTorah k'dosha. To make the person intelligent in the depths of the hidden parts of the Holy Torah. Okay, so you see all these wonderful things that come from the Shema. Yeah?
Why did he use Shabtai as the name of
Hashem? I do. Well, I don't know.
Oh.
I don't know. Well, I'm sure there's a reason. I don't know. Well, usually Shakai always refers to God just provides enough. Just provides enough. So I don't know. You want to provides just enough intellect. It's limitation. Always refers to limitation. All right. So you could say there's a lot of intellect God has, but He only going to give you a little bit. So maybe that's why He uses that name. Could be. Yeah.
It's now we understand here that Neshama is out of the body. It's not in.
That's right.
Then how can we tint it? We were talking before.
How can we what?
Tint. I mean, make the.
We'll talk about it. The truth is, you can't. The truth is, you can't. And that's we're going to talk about it a lot. We're
going to
talk about it today. We're going to talk about it today. Good question. Okay, so now what he's going to try to do, and we'll try to get through this as painlessly as possible, he's going to try to resolve the problem that, on the one hand, the Kabbalists have told us that the level of neshama rests in the brain. Its place is in the brain. And now we're telling you, no, the reality is it's not in the brain. It's external to man. So this is what he's got to explain to us. So, let's see what's going to be the best way to present this. So maybe what we'll do is, we'll backtrack. There was something that I skipped a while back, way in the beginning, because I thought it was way too hard and hopefully get out of it. But to get through this part, I just can't get out of it. So we're going to have to make a little digression or an introduction to understand a little bit to the left. Now, I really can't give you a scholarly rendition of this, okay? But I could just go through the motions and at least expose you to the buzzwords, okay? So when you see him using the buzzwords, you have some idea of what in the world he's talking about. Okay? So we've done these two. So we're going to look at the next three, which is partsufim, which means faces, sfirot, which are those spheres, and the categories, which we'll talk about. Okay? Now, there is this concept of sfirot. All right? There's this concept of sfirot, which are different manifestations and filtrations of how the development happens within different worlds. In other words, on a simple level, every world, you don't jump from one world to the next world like that. There are levels within each world. Okay? And those levels, for simple, are the sfirot. And there are really 10 sfirot. You don't have to know the names. We're not learning it at that kind of a level. The top one is called Keser, the bottom one is called Malchus. Okay, crown and Malchus, kingdom. And obviously the higher up is holier and more spiritual and less constrainment, and the lower down is more constrainment. So within each world, there are 10 sfirot. Okay, I'm not even going to tell you within each sfira, there are 10 sfirot. That's what you have. Okay, you've got these 10 sfirot. Now, there's a new concept that the Arizal revealed to us, this idea of partsufim, faces. And partsuf literally means a face. Okay, and the Arizal was Megala to us. He revealed this secret to us, the idea of the face. What's the concept of a face? I don't think we talked about this in the beginning, did we?
Yeah, the top of
a face. Face means a totality. In other words, a half of a face is not a face. You can have an eye, you can have a nostril, you can have an eye and a nostril, but it's not a face. A face means you got to have everything. You've got to have a totality over there. The unity that we call a face is when you have all the details. Okay? That makes up the phenomena called a face. And that, you know, that impacts into halacha as well. For example, we know you're not allowed to make, and I won't ask you a question on this because we can go on forever on this little point even. You know, you can't have a three-dimensional face, image of a face in your home. A three-dimensional image of face you cannot have. Because it reflects godliness to a certain extent. And you can't have it. But if the face, that's halacha. But if the face is missing a little piece, then it's not prohibited. If you just chip off a little bit of the 3D image, it's not prohibited because it's not a face. That's the only thing I'm bringing out. A face has to be a whole unit. So that Rizal revealed to us that the ten sfirot, they're not all necessarily independently complete units. And therefore the ten sfirot really break down into five complete units, so to speak. And they form a certain hierarchy of totalities. Okay? So he took the ten, and for various reasons, a number of them, especially the sixth in the middle there, got broken up, and they lost, and they lacked their totality. And therefore there is a broader range of five groups. Okay, that's what the Arizal revealed to us. Okay, some of these sfirot in and of themselves have a totality, and some don't. All right. So there are aspects within the ten sfirot that there are some sfirot that have a self-contained totality, and others no. They need to be integrated with others to create a totality. Okay, that's the idea. And within that, there's five totalities. Okay. So if you look at the list there, you'll see the top one is called Keser, and that is its own totality. And therefore, as a Svira, it's one, and the name it was given is called Arich Anpin, the long face. Okay, don't ask me why it's called the long face, but it's called, those are the buzzwords. If you hear these words, these are the buzzwords, and we might come across these words. Let's call it Arich Anpin. Okay, now the next two again, Chochma and Bina, are also self-contained totalities, and they're called respectively Abba and Ima, mother and father, father and mother. Okay. Now the next six, going from Chesed and all the way through Yesod, okay, with Tiferet being in the middle, those six together are called the Zeir Anpin, the small face. And they're also known as the six edges of Tiferet, since Tiferet is in the middle, so it's called like that. That's the buzz term they use: six edges of Tiferet. So those six have to form a unit, and that's called the Zeir Anpin. And finally, Malchus, which is the tenth one, is called Nukva, the female. Okay, each one of these partsufim, each one of these faces, is a whole independent level of existence. Okay, so that does a lot for us, right? Okay, now, again, everything's been broken up into five. You see how everything is five. You've got your levels of soul that are five. You've got worlds that are five. Within the worlds, you've got partsufim that are five. The five keeps coming over and over and over and over again. The reason why it's five, because there are five categories which define anything. The basic five definitions. So we'll go through those five definitions, give you just one simple example, so you'll get an idea. And in every type of entity that exists, to have that entity come into existence, you need that, in whatever form it takes. And you have to understand it's going to go way beyond physical understandings, metaphysical essences as well, which we're not going to be able to explain. Yeah?
In October, when you briefly went over this, you said that the top of one face,
We're going to get to that. I'm going to get to that. It's coming up. But first, I got to explain this first because it's just too much information here to get down otherwise. All right, yeah?
I'm sorry, where does Banim fit into that?
I didn't get to it yet.
Okay.
I didn't get to that. And I didn't get to... Oh, that's something I didn't get into yet. We'll see. We'll get to it. Okay, so we start at the top. So Keser reflects the will for there to be something. Okay? The will for there to be something That's created. There's the will. Okay? That's an independent, self-contained phase, the will. Okay? Phase two, with the wisdom, or we can call it the raw possibilities. I'm just, in general, then I'll walk you through an example. Number three, Bina, means to expand the possibilities, meaning the minor details of the major details. That's the understanding. You have a general wisdom, but then you get the nitty-gritties. So let's give an example. It's just a real simple example. Example of keser, of will, would mean the will, let us say, to make a classroom. That's the first level. That's the first category. There has to be a will. I want to make a classroom. That's number one. Phase two needs a little bit of wisdom. Well, what does a classroom have? So now we're going to go to the raw possibilities. Well, what would a classroom have? Tables, chairs, bookshelves, books. Those are the possibilities that will enable you to have a classroom. Okay. Phase three, now we have to expand the possibilities. So we expand the possibilities by saying, what is involved in make, what's it going to take to make it? All right? I see a table. What's going to take? Well, it's going to take two craftsmen, one automatic saw, 50 nails, whatever it's going to take to create it, right? That now is the mind expands the details into a real plan of action. Okay? What does this mean? The fact you're telling me tables, just what does that mean? What's it going to take? All right, that's the third thing. You're expanding the possibilities. Now let's expand the possibilities. And how, you know, it's a lot more than just the table. All right, that's the understanding level over here. Okay, and this is also understood as the Abba-Ima relationship, the father-mother relationship, because we know the relationship between a husband and wife. Okay, for them to have children, right? Is that the father, what lies in the father's seed is all the genetic coding for what the child is going to be. But to make that coding come into reality, there has to be the ima, there has to be the mother that expands the possibilities that come from the seed of the father. That's the idea. All the main idea is there. The main coding is coming from the father, but it's got to be expanded through the wife. All right? That's why they're called Abba and Ima. That's why they're giving them these kinds of terms. Okay, phase four is the doing stage. Okay, now let's build it. Let's get it done now. And that's, you need six spherot for that. There's six major spherot of activity that get that process done. Okay, that's the doing part. And finally, we've got the malchus, which is like the receiver. It's focusing all the activity at an objective. Okay, you've got a workforce, which is phase four, but then you need the target, which the workforce focuses all their activity upon. And you need to have that receptacle that's receiving all the benefit of all the planning, all the thinking, all the expanding, all the activity. It's all for what? Right? So that is called as well the nukva, the female. As the female is the one who receives from the male in terms of production. It does do the receiving. It will then expand, but it does the receiving, right? That target ultimately becomes a finished product as it's infused with all that was done beforehand. Okay, and this is what the Arizal was Megala, what revealed to us. Okay? So we've got Olamos, we have worlds. Worlds are these comprehensive groupings over here. And then we've got those Svirot, but within those Svirot, they've been broken up into five parts Sufim, these hierarchies of totalities that exist. So the lower totalities, they receive from the higher totalities that are above them. Okay? And that's the general notion over here. So that's the thing I really should have talked to you in the beginning, but I figured if we would have talked about it in October, you would have forgot it by now, right? So that's the general notion over here. Okay, that's the fives, the hierarchies, and those are the terms that are being thrown around over here.
You sing the song on Shabbos by Mincha. terms, that includes all these, a lot of these terms, doesn't it? It's certainly
saying those, in what do you call it? Pnei Hechala. Yeah, what we sing. That's a lot of these ideas are incorporated over there. All right? So, fine. So we got all that. So now let's take a look back into the text and let's see if we can figure out something over here. Okay? Now, there's going to be an interesting correlation. The correlation we have to focus on over here is, what is the real, at the end of the chapter, we discussed the relationship of the neshama to the ruach. And we're discussing how the neshama is not really inside the being, but it sparks off. Now, where is it sparking off to? Alright? And that's what he's going to talk about very soon. Okay, we're going to see how it sparks off to help the ruach. We're going to see that shortly. And then what he will do as we go to the next page is going to try to show how this relationship fits in all these other phases as well. How it happens. This is within the human being. And then, remember, everything happens within the human being. It's just reflected in the cosmic world. And then we'll have to apply this on a cosmic level. Okay, so that's why I'm telling you all these things over here. Okay, so let's take a look now at what the text has to say. Last paragraph. Okay, we're okay so far? We're just hanging on for dear life? Okay. I know I am. Okay. Now, what does it say? That which it says in the Zohar, in the Kabbalistic works, Shebechinas ha-neshama, that the level of soul, Mishkana b'moach, it dwells in the brain, ha-adam. Now, but we just said that that's not so. So how could that be? Kavana sum, their intent is, on hanitzotze ziv ora, the sparks of splendid illumination, hamaskeles moch of aslicho, which allow the brain to understand. Lo atzmuso mamish, but not that it resides in the brain. Now, he's going to explain what this idea means now. The ikar kavana sum, and their main understanding over here, Zal, is referring to the Bechinas Gimel Reishin Shel HaRuach. It's talking about the Gimel Reishin, the three heads of the Ruach, Sod HaMochin, which is the basis of its brain, of the Ruach's brain. So I'm just going to read it first, and then we'll explain it. Shehem Pa'amim Misnotetzim, sometimes they emanate light, Pa'amim Mistachim, sometimes they don't emanate light, Ubayim B'Sot Tosefes, to provide additional light. Lamisha Zochlos, that's someone who merits it, Kiyadu, as is well known by the mystics. But lo al Bechinas HaNeshama Ikaris, we're not talking about the real level of soul. No way. V'chein Kaz Rabbeinu HaGodol HaGon HaChosid, Moreinu Rabbi Eliyahu. And so said the great Holy One, Rabbi Eliyahu, is referring to the Gra, his Rebbe, the Vilna Gaon. V'be'er HaLeicholos Be'echolot Tinyano, as is explained in that place. Okay, so now what's he saying over here now? So everything... Okay, we're going to learn in the next chapter, for example, even within yourself, with each level of soul, there are 10 sefirot. Okay, in each, he's going to go into that in more detail in the next chapter, but you just got to know this. Nefesh, there's 10 sefirot of nefesh, there's 10 sefirot in ruach, 10 sefirot in neshama. Okay, so what we're going to be focusing on right now is, within the ruach, you've got your 10 sefirot. Okay, so let's just plug into Ruach, right? You got those 10 sefirot of Ruach, okay? So there's the beginning. Now the beginning sefirot, really, they're really related mostly to thought, will, wisdom, understanding. That's not an action stage in producing this level of existence, right? So that's what he means when he says the Gimel Reishin, the three heads. The three heads are Keser, Chochmah, and Bina. So when we talk about the three heads of any level existence, these are the three heads. Keser, Chochmah, and Bina. Okay? So at the level of Ruach, the top of the Ruach, that level of Ruach, Ruach is a type of existence. That type of existence comes into being through the 10 Sefirot. Right? That's all gotta go through that process. How you come up with a ruach, you gotta go through all those categories to produce a ruach. okay, and how the ruach functions. And therefore, the top level of the ruach are those three reishi, those three heads, okay? Those three aspects of the will, the wisdom, and the understandings, all right? That's like the brains of the operation. That's the brains, you know, don't mix up with the brain, the human brain, but it's the top of the totem pole. In Ruach, that's the top of Ruach, or the ten sefirot there, the top three, Keser, Chochma, and Bina. Okay? Now, what is important to realize, that's what you mentioned, those brains are only as good as the direct product of the previous set of sefirot. In other words, the neshama had its ten sefirot. Now, what's going to happen to that ruach, the top level of the ruach is only going to be as good as the bottom level of the neshama was. Because we said it long ago that each level of soul is like the soul to the body relationship to that level of soul below that, right? So the finality of those three top levels within the ruach level have a lot to depend on what the lowest levels of Netzach, Hod, Sod, and Malchus, of the lowest level of Neshama, were able to get going for you. Okay, so they're direct products of what's been set up in the lower Sfirot of Neshama, that you find the direct product in the highest levels, in the brain capacity of the Ruach. Okay? So, that's what he's saying when he says, when we're talking about this sparks and where they reside and where are they happening, they're really happening at the three heads of the Ruach, okay, which is the brains of the operation for the Ruach over here. All right? Now, he gets into really, it really becomes much more complicated than this. Those, they're called the mochin. That's the word he's used, sod mochin, which is the basis of the brain of that level of ruach. Okay? So the mochin of the ruach, the power that is revealed in those three highest level, right, of ruach, they are what, if you're worthy for it, they are sparks of the lowest level of neshama. From the lowest end of the sefirot. Okay, that's which, if you can get that, you're very fortunate. See, a lot of, in reality, for example, you know, we only see or can understand products and production. You can't see thought. It's always hidden. Okay? Although, based on what's been produced, you have some idea of what's been thought, but you can't always see what's thought. And thought is hidden, action is revealed. Sometimes there are breakthroughs where the thought somehow merges with the production, where you could have something become so apparently clear by what happens, like you know everything that was involved in the thought. It's like a breakthrough. And mystically, we understand usually there's a delineation between action and the thought and the production, right? Because you know that, because a lot of times you think things, they don't come into reality. It's not just automatic. You could think and then nothing comes out. But let's say there'd be no delineation. Let's say it was a clear merging of thought and production. This is what he calls tosefes, additional light. That's just a general idea. You get a breakthrough where they're able to really, the thought becomes so apparent. That's like a breakthrough. That's called a tosefes. That's more than what you usually get. Okay. So now, relating to us, so the mochin of the ruach, the brains of the ruach, the three highest levels, he says, now what is the wording he uses? Ba'im besod tosefes. He says they get some kind of increase. Why? Because the thought aspect of the ruach, that hidden ruach, it comes now to some increase, right? But the power of that highest level of the ruach is actually preceded in the neshama. And what's happening is the sparks of the neshama are revealed when, how do you know that the sparks of the neshama have now come in, so to speak? It's when the ruach is in total contact with the highest levels over there. When the ruach is able to totally merge the lower levels with the higher levels, there's no delineations anymore. Okay? When what is thought actually gets done. And when it gets done, it's such a perfect reflection of what it was thought. Okay? When that Tosefes happens, the reality is that the real power of the Neshama has now become enclosed in the highest level of Ruach.
Is that Moshe?
No, Moshe was even more than that. Moshe was even more than that.
So Moshe didn't just...
Way past that.
So Moshe...
He had the whole thing, not just the sparks. Here we're just getting the sparks to become enclosed.
He didn't take the bottom three levels.
It was the whole thing, and it just was all in there. Okay? So Reb Chaim, what he's really trying to do, he wants to make the words of the Kabbalists that says that the soul rests in the brain to come to some kind of synchronization to reality, because the reality is it's not. The reality is it's external. Right? So he's saying the Mekubalim, the Kabbalists didn't mean that it's in the brain, but the sparks of the Neshama are there. And when the Ruach has its full power, okay, and everything is revealed, that even the thought is in such tandem with the action level below, that we say that what you have enclosed, you've enclosed the sparks and the power of Neshama. When you have that breakthrough, it means that the forces of the Neshama have been enclosed in the Ruach, and then it's correct to say that the Neshama is in the brain at that point. Not that it's really in the brain, but it's acting. In other words, you've got your Ruach, well, we said it's mostly in the heart, but the truth is, emotions from the heart have some connection to the brain, if you like it or not. Emotions of the heart, the highest level of heart is brain. It's the highest level when they're connected. The brain is, it should be directing the emotions. That's the highest level. Okay? So in that's what we mean to say, if you've really been able to tap into the lowest sparks of Neshama, and now that the entire top levels of Ruach are fully merging with the rest, you know you've enclosed many sparks of the Neshama within there. Okay? So in other words, the Neshama is manifest in the mind by having the power to unite with the Ruach as the bottom aspect, and the Neshama becomes the brains of that lower level, right? It's a manifestation of the power of the Neshama into the highest level of Ruach. So the Neshama isn't really in the mind, but it manifests in the mind. Okay? And I can't tell you how that happens. But that's what he's saying over here. He's saying that these sparks, they manifest in the Gimel Reishin Shel HaRuach, in the three highest, the brain power of the Ruach. That's the Sod HaMochin, which is the basis of the Mochin, the real brains of the operation. And sometimes the sparks emanate, sometimes they go away. And they provide this additional light. It provides that these three highest levels merge with the seven levels below. Lamisha Zochelazet, to someone who merits this. But we're not referring to the Bechina Neshama Ikaris. We're not talking about the real Neshama. The real Neshama, forget about it. It's outside. You're just getting the lowest level of sparking off into it. Okay, that's what he's saying. Let's just finish the paragraph, then we'll take away. Va'kol Echa, but it's really all one. Shebechina hatachtona shel neshama hamisnotzetzes b'deo v'sil haskilo, the lowest level of the soul that sparks off into the mind, to in the intellect to understand, he that is, those sparks are the gimel hareishin shel haruach b'mochin shelo. Those are the three heads that are the brain power force of what goes on in the ruach. K'mo shisbar lefaneinu mitzvah Hashem, as which will be explained.
Wow.
Okay. So again, I wrote down like the simple layman's way to understand what this paragraph means. That we're talking about the manifestation of the power of the Neshama into the brains, the main source of operation of the Ruach. It's the manifestation. The Neshama really isn't in the mind, but it manifests itself in the mind. How? By having its power unite with the Ruach. It's uniting with the Ruach. It's forces, but it isn't in it. That's what he's saying. That's what a person, we wish you could be Zoha to, that you could merit this.
And when that happens, does that person have an increased understanding?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And a lot more happens,
I mean,
which we'll tell you in a second.
Somebody suggests Rashi. He had all these ideas.
Oh, yes. Great people had this.
That's what I wanted to ask. Do we know, I understand this is a very high level. Do we know more or less, like, how high, like, what are we talking, like, crawl plant? Are we talking about like reptiles?
Well, there's levels within levels, right? I'm sure there's more you can, more levels, sparks.
Then levels.
More sparks. Like, I think at the end of the book he talks about prophecy.
How did he come to explain it? From the Kabbalah?
This is all the Kabbalah.
From there he tries to sort of tell us how this works.
But prophets, but nobody gets the neshama internalized. Nobody. Since Moshe, nobody gets it internalized. The question is, how much of those sparks can you bring in to that level? That's where you're going to be able to understand things in a much deeper way. Okay? But what is important that comes out of this, okay, and this is the key idea over here that has hopefully a little bit of relevance for us over here. We're talking about this neshama really now is a force that's external to the human, right? The person is able to gain from it, the person is able to feed from it, but the neshama is not within the person. Right? The same thing, it's the glass blower, it's the air, the breath. The question is, how much of the breath can you tap into? Okay, and that's why he's going to bring many, many sources that keep talking about the breath of God. That's referring to the neshama aspect. How much of that neshama can you tap into? That's the trick. Okay?
It's connected, isn't it? It's like cause and effect.
Certainly. I mean, you've got your special neshama. Right, you've got your special connection to your special neshama. The question is, how much are you going to tap into it?
I mean, if there's no effect, there's no cause, and it's the same here. If there's no nothing for it to attach to,
correct,
then there's no neshama.
He's going to say it's there. Don't say it's there. It is very there. It's a potential force.
But it can't.
You have to do something to make it a kinetic force.
It can't have any independent existence.
Right. What do you mean? Independent of you? Of
yeah,
you?
Yeah.
Well, it's your resource, and it's to be used or to be not used.
And if I'm not there, it's not there. Right?
It's going to be somewhere
else. Well, go somewhere else. It's something that's created.
So it could be. It's to me.
Okay. I don't know. It's the one that's designated for you. It's the one that's designated for you. If you don't use it, it goes somewhere else. I don't know. I mean, it all eventually all gets interconnected anyway at the end. But it's your amount of neshama that you can access, that you should try to access.
What's the
volume? I didn't get to there yet. We won't get there until we get to the next chapter.
Would you say it's like a power plant, for example, if you use way back?
Well, that's fair. Yeah, that's
there,
okay.
But you can only hold a certain amount of energy, and you can tap in a little bit.
You could tap in more sparks, more energy.
So it's there, it's not in.
You've got to do the things to tap into it, and we'll discuss what are those things. That's the next chapter is going to say what you do to tap into it. And the next chapter will tell you why it's important to do that. Okay, we're going to see. Okay, so let's explain something else. We're going to.
Your Chochma and Bina, where would Das fit in? Or is
I don't know.
Euphemism
I don't know. I don't know where Das fits in there.
It's a combination of Chochma.
There's a third one. I'm not sure where that fits
and
in.
And is it higher or lower than
Chochma and Bina are left and right, and Das is in the middle?
I'm just giving you what he's given us so far. I'm not, you know, want to do deeper mysticism with another book another time. I don't know. I'll have to look further. But those are the ones we have to know over here. So now, with this, we'll explain a very nice interpretation of the verse in the Torah. In Parsha Shoftim, way out in Deuteronomy, it says, and you'll see why we're going to tell you all this, but it's a very nice shtickle Torah from the Shem Mishmuel, and you'll see where this fits in. It says, "Shoftim v'shotrim titin lecha b'chol sharecha." Judges and policemen, or what's a better word, shoter, so the authorities, you shall place for yourself, singular tense, b'chol sharecha in all your gates. And then it says, "And they shall judge the people." So it's kind of, there's a big problem with the language. First it's talking about the singular, judges for yourself, the individual, and then they shall judge. So Reb Chaim Vital, the great mystic, explains like this. The word she'arecha, in all your gates, means the gates of the human being. Judges and policemen you shall make for yourself in all of your gates. The gates of the human being, meaning that a human being has five primary senses. Mm-hmm. Now, it's a mistake for a person to assume that those are external senses, because in essence, Reb Chaim Vital says, they are the sha'arim lalev, they are the gates to the heart. Through those five senses, a person can enter into the innermost part of his being. Okay, that's the gates to the heart. So the Torah tells you that you have to put judges at the gateways that are the entranceways into you. Meaning to say, before a person looks at something. Okay, that's sight. Before a person smells something, tastes something, touches something, any of those items. First you have to put a shofet, you have to make a judge to decide if it's something worthwhile to touch or look at. Right? You're going by down the street, there are certain things you shouldn't be looking at, and you want to look at, you want to use that gate. You want to have that gateway used. You have to have a shofet, you have to have a judge to decide, is it something to look at or not? And then you need a shoter to enforce the judgment. Okay, you've got to first decide, judge, is this something I should be looking at or not? Is this something I should be tasting or not? And then once you have, then you need a shoter. You need a policeman to enforce that decision. And so with all the senses. That's why it says, shoftim v'shotrim, judges and enforcers, tasa, you shall make lecha, for yourself, the individual. The singular. Only later does the verse say, vishaftu, and they will judge the people a righteous judgment, meaning to say, if you are a good judge of yourself and demand of yourself judgment and control of judgment, then you could be in a position to establish a judicial system for others as well. That's what the verse really means. Much deeper understanding. If you can make judges and policemen for your own gateways in your life, then you'll be able to set up a system of a judicial court for people. Okay? Now, there is a medrash on this verse which seems to be very not related to what's going on. The medrash over there says, we know that a relative cannot be a witness in a court of law. So the medrash says, but can a relative be a judge? And the Medrash concludes, brings a proof that a relative cannot be a judge. Okay, so now the commentary asks, why does this Medrash put onto this verse? Like, what does that have to do with anything? Right? Usually a Medrash is supposed to be an analysis of the text. So we're saying you have to have judge, you have this. Well, who's talking about relatives? Right? That's the question that the Shem Mishmuel, the Sukkot Shavuot Rebbe, asks. So he answers like this. He says, since the Torah implores us to be our own judge and our own enforcer at all our gates, but there's a problem. Who is the greatest relative that exists than oneself? Right? It says a person is korovates lasmo. A person is most related to himself. Right? Your wife can be related to you, your brother can be related to you, but you are for sure related to yourself. Right? Now what do you have to do? You have to judge what things you should be looking at, what things you should be tasting, right? And so now, how can we be a judge for ourselves? That's the real question. How can you spiritually monitor your development or your regression if you're a relative to yourself?